It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Older than I'm wise.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
What is this, amateur hour?
This is going to be huge.
I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Just when I think you've said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Time to head home for a hump day edition of the Sports Rush. I am Brett Rump, Adam Lundy in the producer's chair. It is packed up until 6 o'clock. Coming up, we'll talk to Kevin Bowen. Of course, always entertaining when we've got KB from 93.5, 107.5, The Fan down in Indianapolis. Is it still 93.5 and 107.5, or is it just 107.5? Now, I can't keep track because at one point they were 1070. Whatever. The sports guy down in Indy, Kevin Bowen. He's going to join us coming up at about 4:35. Hour number two, we get to talk to Indiana Tech men's basketball coach Ted Albert. Big night, in fact, big week for local college basketball. And we'll tell you where you can go, where you can see the big games, because there's plenty of them on tap over the next few days, including tonight out at the Schaefer Center, where the Indiana Tech Warriors will have a women's men's basketball doubleheader against Cornerstone. And on the men's side, that means a couple of teams with just one loss each in the Warriors versus Cornerstone. So we'll talk to Ted Albert about how his team has performed the bounce back after the loss to St. Francis and heading into Cornerstone tonight, what he expects from his Warriors. We've got that coming up at 5:20 this afternoon. 46862 is how you connect with the show. 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, whatever is on your mind, whether it's the Colts, whether it's Indiana, whether it's Purdue, Notre Dame, college football playoff teams. I don't care. Let us know. It's open forum today from the text line. 46862. Also coming up today, Adam and I have to make some NFL picks because, well, I didn't last week. And Adam, quite honestly, shouldn't have. He did, but shouldn't have.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Well, basically, you figure a coin is going to flip and come up.
Probably do better than me.
Yeah, 50-50, right?
Yeah.
And what was your record last week?
Oh,
about,
man.
50-50.
Yeah, right around there. It's just really bad.
In the neighborhood. The coin and I would have been battling it out on Monday night.
Pretty much.
So anyway, ACC Big Ten Challenge continues. Games were last night. I don't know if anything really was earth-shattering last night. They always put the biggest games on the final night, and that's what we've got tonight. I think Indiana, UNC, obviously the highlight game of this challenge. It's the final challenge. So once it ends tonight, no more of the ACC Big Ten Challenge. ESPN, along with basically the ACC, saying sayonara, see you later, because you're not going to give us a TV contract. We're going to go find another event, and we're going to make it the ACC SEC Challenge, and that's where it's heading for next year. But tonight, Indiana, UNC, Hoosiers, North Carolina, the wannabe with the team that just got it done as far as getting to a Final Four, getting to a championship game, and returning four of their five starters from a team from a year ago. And I'm kind of surprised UNC comes into this game on a two-game losing streak. Defensively, they've given up a lot of points, but they still have a lot of offensive weapons. Kind of a cool moment yesterday. I don't know if you happen to catch this on social media, but it was making the rounds last night, Adam, that Bobby Knight was at Indiana basketball practice yesterday.
Very cool.
And so you had Ted Kitchell, you had Randy Whitman, you had, of course, Mike Woodson, you know, Jordan Holes on the coaching staff. I'm just thinking of all the Indiana tradition that you had in that gym yesterday. while the Hoosiers were practicing, getting prepared for UNC. But Bobby Knight made an appearance, and for many, many years, remember, Bobby Knight wouldn't step foot on Indiana's campus, and then all of a sudden he showed up, what, a couple of years ago, he ended up attending a women's softball game or something like that, and that was a surprise. Then he ended up getting the recognition at Assembly Hall, and now he's showing up for practice. His health not doing real well, but Bobby Knight did attend practice yesterday. But as we mentioned, for UNC, the challenge for the Hoosiers is taking on a team that played in a national championship game just this spring and has four of those five starters back, including Armando Bacot, who is averaging 16, or last year averaged 16.3 points per game. Caleb Love averaged 15.9, R.J. Davis 13.5, and Leaky Black. This year, Caleb Love leading the scoring at 20 points per game. But, you know, they added as that fifth piece to replace, who was it? I'm trying to think now, I'm drawing a blank on the guy that had the kind of long hair. Oh, my gosh. And I just read about it like five times today. You know, it's like one of those old brain problems. But they lost one starter, and Pete Nance, who is the transfer from Northwestern. Played four seasons at Northwestern, gets the extra year. It's a grad year, so he transfers in, takes over a spot at UNC, and Pete Nance is averaging about 12 points per game for them this year. So a pretty good piece to kind of fill in that fifth starter spot. But it's not a deep team. If you look at their box scores, most games they're only playing seven players. And in a couple of games, they played mostly six. Now, there were a couple of games they added that eighth man in, but a lot of times that's foul trouble or some other situation where they throw in the eighth player. But for a team that is not very deep, that comes off three games out in Portland and then travels all the way to Bloomington, it's a couple of days of rest, but not long rest. It's a challenge because remember, Indiana did not travel last week. Indiana did not have back-to-back games last week. So Indiana should be physically more ready to go than North Carolina. One thing that is a key to watch tonight at the free throw line, UNC has made more free throws than their opponents have attempted. That's a stat that Coach Kaufman has got me hooked on, because Coach Kaufman from the Mastodons, that is one of the first stats that he looks at, because he thinks that shows who was the aggressor in the fight. Can you get to the free throw line more times than your opponents make free throws? Or can you make more than your opponents shoot? I got that backwards. So far this year, UNC has made 138 free throws. Their opponents have attempted 111. So keep an eye on how many times Indiana gets to the free throw line tonight. That could be a key. But also, it could be a sign that UNC does not play a real aggressive defensive game. And that might be an opportunity for Indiana to really exploit North Carolina. I think this game's going to be higher than average scoring. I think there's going to be points scored in this game tonight. I would not be surprised if the winning team can get to 80. I think it's going to be real close to that for a winning number, right around 80 points. Maybe upper 70s, like 77, 78. But, you know, Indiana, of course, Mike Woodson wants to preach the defense. But I think this game's going to have too many offensively talented players to keep it anywhere in the 60s, let's put it that way. It's going to be upper 70s, 80s, I think, for a winning number.
Yeah, well, the over-under is 144.5. Are you taking the over or the under?
I take the over.
There you go.
I take the over. That's 72 apiece. Over.
All right. I just figured I'd ask, so that, you know, yeah.
You know, Caleb Love has shot horribly from three-point land so far this year. I think he's shooting like, what, 24% or something like that from three. He's a better shooter than that. Numbers are going to even themselves out. Indiana's not a great three-point shooting team, but I still think this is going to be a game where both teams kind of push the pace. I think Mike Woodson likes to push the pace with his guards. Xavier Johnson, you're not going to slow him down. If you give him an opportunity to take off with the ball, he's going to take off. And so I think both teams play fast. It's an up-tempo game. I would take the over on 144.5. How about you?
I'll take the over, yeah. I think it'll be a high-scoring game, too.
It's a lot more fun on the show when you, like, don't agree with me.
I know, but it's just... I
sold my point, right?
Yeah, exactly. You did such a good job. No, I just think this could almost have almost like a March Madness feel to the this game.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, with March Madness, you think, okay, defense will take over. But if you look at March Madness scores, a lot of times you get to the Final Four and these teams are offensively built. You know, they're
locked in.
They're locked in. They score points.
Yeah.
And so
I think they'll be locked in tonight.
I would, if I had to guess, I would say it ends up being something like an 82-75 or 76 final or something in that neighborhood. I mean, that's way over the 144 number.
Absolutely.
46862, by the way, you can debate this with us on whether you think the over or the under of 144.5. Now, I don't even know the line in this game. I could guess it. If I guessed it's at Indiana,
yeah,
two straight losses by North Carolina, I would say Hoosiers 1.5.
I'm seeing Indiana 4.5.
Really?
Yeah, and this is Caesar Sportsbook here.
Might have to take points if you give me 4.5 of them.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, let's face it. It's a very talented UNC team. It's a proud UNC team that got derailed back-to-back in a 24-hour period. One of those went four overtimes. 4.5 points seems like a pretty big margin for a team that 5 days ago was, in fact, 3 days ago, to be honest, was the number one team in the country.
Yeah, it's amazing what a couple games can do. And, I mean, they were close games, too. So it's
4.5.
Yeah.
I wonder if it got bet to that number. Like, did it open at like 2.5, got bet to 4.5? You know, Mr. Vegas would probably know. He could text us and let us know.
Yeah.
If the betting has moved the line to 4.5, like if everybody's gone heavy with the money on Indiana's side, because that's what moves the line. Also tonight, Purdue, Florida State.
Yeah, Florida
pardon
State.
Me, pardon me from laughing, but.
No, they're, yeah.
They're awful.
Yeah, the start of the season is definitely worth laughing at.
I mean, we're going to, I'll tell you what, the show will start with Purdue bashing tomorrow if they lose to Florida State. I don't care if it's on the road. Florida State has been, I mean, I can't say they're a joke, but I mean, this is.
It's pretty close.
This is not what we know of Florida State.
No.
I mean, normally you would think maybe preseason Purdue, Florida State would be an intriguing game, but Florida State has already lost to Stetson. By 9 points, wasn't even a close game. And that was at home. They lost to UCF, Troy, and Siena.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean.
What are we doing?
Yeah. And the Troy game, they lost by 7. But they gave up 83 points to Stetson, 79 points to Troy, 80 points to Siena, got beat by 17. And is that the Siena Saints? I think it is.
I believe so. Hey, Mr. Vegas weighed in on our text line 4682. Well, he didn't tell us if they're moving lines, but he did tell us. Yeah, IU 4.5. Purdue is 16.
I mean,
Notre Dame is plus 2.5.
I'm tempted to take the give the points.
Thanks, Mr. Vegas.
On Purdue.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, they just beat Gonzaga and Duke.
Yeah.
And they would have covered 16 in both those, right?
I think so, yeah. So, they won by 18 and 19.
Yeah. And so they play Florida State. One and seven, Florida State. How would you not give the points if you already have a team that just won by 18 and by 19 against two of the top 10 teams in the country?
I don't know. Maybe Florida State gathers all their grit and determination and pulls it together tonight.
Again, remember this.
Yeah.
The line is set by Vegas to split the betting. Okay, you take a team like Florida State, a lot of the public will never even look at their record. They'll just look at Florida State and say, hey, good basketball team. Man, they're going to give me 17 or 16 points to take a good basketball team, and they'll not realize this year they're 1-7.
There you go.
Like Southern Miss that the Mastodons played last week.
Yeah.
In fact, a week ago, the Mastodons played Southern Miss. If you didn't look Southern Miss up, you would have probably jumped on the Mastodons getting points. Because Southern Miss has been a miserable basketball team the last couple of years. In fact, last year they had lost 14 straight in the regular season. I think they lost like 16 of their last 17 games overall. Yeah. That was not a good basketball team last year. But they have like all but three players transfer out. Mm-hmm. They bring in all these Power Five conference players, a guy from South Carolina who started for the Gamecocks. They bring in a guy from Mississippi who started for Ole Miss. And next thing you know, Southern Miss is loaded and a really good basketball team.
Yeah, they were great.
And they've since won a couple of games since the Cancun Challenge. Mm-hmm. So they just keep winning. They're still unbeaten. I think they're 8-0 now.
Wow.
But if you didn't look them up and you would have gone on recent reputation, you'd have said, man, Mastodons, you're giving me like 7.5, 8.5 points, whatever it was. I jump on it. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Last night, kind of a great moment, maybe overdue. You remember last year? You remember, I don't know if you remember on this show, and maybe some of our listeners that have been with us for a while and been listening to the show religiously for 6 months or whatever it's been, you would remember that I said at the time, back in February, as soon as we knew that Mark Davidson was not doing real well physically, you could just see his health deteriorating quickly. I said, name the court after Mark Davidson. Mm-hmm. Do it now. Don't wait till next year. And the reason was I would have liked to have seen it done before he passed. Unfortunately, shortly after the season, he passes away. But last night was the home opener, in fact, the season opener for the Blackhawk Christian Braves. Congratulations to Matt Roth, who fills some pretty big shoes, taking over from Mark Davidson. They get a win over Northside, but that was not the big story last night. The big story is that the court was unveiled as Mark Davidson Court. Very, very well deserved.
Yeah, that's really great. That's really a classy move and good way to honor his legacy.
And not only one of the great coaches, one of the great people that we've had involved with high school basketball here in the Summit City. Let's check out what's happening in the world of sports and get a quick look at headlines with Adam Lundy.
Let's do it. Browns running back Nick Chubb admitted there was excitement in the Cleveland locker room regarding the return of quarterback Deshaun Watson. "We're all excited," he said. "We've waited a long time for him to come back." UAB is finalizing a deal with former NFL quarterback Trent Dilfer to become its next head coach. Dilfer has done NFL analysis for media and has been the head coach at Lipscomb Academy in Tennessee since 2019, but has no college coaching experience.
But he's had a great career at Lipscomb. This is interesting because this is almost like a Jeff Saturday hired by the NFL.
Yep.
Because this is a guy who doesn't have the experience in college, doesn't have the connections maybe recruiting other than being on the other side of it. A lot of his players at Lipscomb obviously were being recruited, but an interesting hire by UAB. And that opening, by the way, is not because UAB was completely faltering. UAB actually has a good football program and had been doing really well under the previous coach, who was forced to resign because of health issues. And that's how the job became open and how Trent Dilfer gets it, but it'll be very interesting to see how he does.
And Ohio State quarterback C.J. Stroud has been named the Big Ten's Offensive Player of the Year for the second straight season. Stroud finished the regular season as the nation's leader in efficiency rating and co-leader in touchdown passes with 37.
Probably no one else that you could think of unless Blake Corum, but kind of had to figure that it was C.J. Stroud's award to lose going into the season, and he did nothing to lose it. There's your headlines with Adam Lundy. We get lonely when we don't get texts, right? We need to get some texts. Parkview Sports Medicine text line 46862.
Yeah.
Like to hear what's on people's minds, right?
I have a question. Who's more likely to lose tonight, Indiana or Purdue? And I mean,
Are you being serious?
I think I am.
I don't think you are.
I'm not.
We know that if there's a more likely to lose,
yeah,
when one's 4.5 point favorite and the other one's a 16.5 point favorite.
I'm just trying to get some Indiana Purdue rivalry
just
going.
Just trying to get somebody stirred up that will text
exactly
and say, "What's Adam drinking? Because I'd like to have some."
It's a little early.
Well, it's never too early. It's always 5 o'clock somewhere. That being said, by the guy who doesn't drink.
Yeah, I don't either.
I mean, once a year,
yeah,
I'll be coerced into a beer.
Yeah. If I have a really long layover at an airport is usually when I'll have my one.
Well, you know, if you look at my life, it's like everybody's allowed a certain quantity of beer for their life.
Sure.
I drank all mine in like a 2-year period. So I
fair enough.
I've met my quota. I better stop or I wouldn't have a liver today.
Yeah, so, I did something similar.
So it's probably best that that I'm not much of a drinker anymore. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Go ahead and let us know what's on your mind. Good week for college hoops, local college hoops. You know, people complain sometimes there's not enough to do in Fort Wayne. You don't have anything to do. Well, here it is, a weeknight. It's a Wednesday night, right? And we've got plenty for you to do tonight because St. Francis, the women, they're at home. They're taking on Goshen. You can go out to the Hutzel Center, take in some St. Francis women's basketball. I think the women so far this year, I believe they're 6-3. I'm doing that on memory. I think they're 6-3 this season. Taking on Goshen. And then you've got, in fact, yes, they are 6-3. I just looked it up.
Nice.
And then you've got Indiana Tech, the Warriors, at the Schaefer Center. Great place to check out a basketball game.
Yeah.
Nice, cozy venue. Easy access because it's right there between Jefferson and Washington. So it doesn't matter if you're coming from the east or the west. You'll go right basically past Indiana Tech and the Schaefer Center. And you can get there tonight. Uh-oh. You can get there tonight. And they've got a doubleheader with the women taking on Cornerstone. That is 8-2 versus 5-4 as the Indiana Tech women off to an 8-2 start, taking on a 5-4 Cornerstone squad. And then the battle of 2 7-1 basketball teams as the Indiana Tech Warriors men's basketball team takes on Cornerstone in game 2 of the doubleheader at the Schaefer Center. So it's 2 for the price of 1. And we'll be talking to Indiana Tech men's basketball coach Ted Albert about the matchup tonight with Cornerstone coming up at about 5:20 this afternoon.
They got to have one of the coolest courts in NAIA basketball at the Schaefer Center with the giant warrior on the court.
Yeah, they did. Well, I you know what? I never really paid attention.
It's really cool. If you look at the court, they just have a giant warrior like walking across the entire. It's really cool.
Huh? And you know, I did PA a couple of times over there for them.
Yeah.
And then they didn't invite me back. I don't know what happened.
I think they got their regular guy back. Is what happened.
I think they were probably afraid. I think they were afraid that maybe you
don't want to step on anybody's toes.
You know, it's kind of like this guy's kind of making our regular guy sound bad. I think that's what it was. I had some fun out there doing some PA. And, you know, it's nice to get a fill-in gig like that every once in a while. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Also a big week this week for Mastodons basketball. Huge week for Mastodons basketball. You know, the Horizon League has these couple of games. They slip in early, and they do it so it doesn't conflict with any of the school's finals week. So this happens to be the weekend for Horizon League conference play. And the Mastodons will start with Detroit Mercy. Mike Davis, former Indiana coach, he is going to be bringing his Detroit Mercy Titans into the Coliseum tomorrow night. And, of course, his son, Antoine Davis, one of the real prolific scorers in all of college basketball, averages over 23 points per game. I think he averages 24, 25 points for his career. Just an outstanding career. His fifth-year guy got a chance, even though it's an outside chance, of becoming the all-time NCAA Division I men's basketball top scorer. He could do that, but again, he's got to average, I think, about 27.5, 28 points per game, and right now he's averaging just a little over 23. But huge game to start the Horizon League schedule. The Mastodons are going to unveil their Horizon League or raise, I don't know if you unveil or raise a banner, but there's going to be a banner ceremony before the game to recognize the Horizon League regular season championship from last season. Kind of a nice way to start their Horizon League portion of their schedule.
I was considering your raising versus unveiling question there.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it depends on what the arena does because, you know, some places they'll have something.
Maybe the banner's already up.
Yeah, some places will have it already up and it's covered and they'll pull something down from it, but some places will raise it up. So
the best thing to say is it's a banner ceremony.
Yeah.
That keeps it so we aren't wrong. Because we do that plenty of times.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. So the banner ceremony will take place just before the tip of Detroit Mercy and Purdue Fort Wayne tomorrow night at the Coliseum. And then Saturday's game, which there's a lot of schedules that probably say it's a 1 o'clock game at the Coliseum. Cross that off, because it is not a 1 o'clock game at the Coliseum on Saturday. It is a 3 o'clock game at the Gate Center on the campus of Purdue Fort Wayne. And you enter, the easiest way to access the Gate Center, if you've not been there, is to enter off of Stellhorn or Hobson. Both those entrances will take you basically right to the parking garage where you can park, go into the Gate Center, check out the game. But the advantages with having a Gate Center game, number one, no bad seats. Every seat is a great seat. Number two, seats are cheap. For a Division I basketball game, I think the seats are like $13. What do you pay at IU? $40? $50? Somebody has to tell me.
I've never been to an IU basketball game.
You know, sometimes
game.
You get spoiled and you don't have to pay for tickets, so sometimes you don't know.
Oh.
I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, the games I've gone to, I haven't had to pay, so I don't know what it cost to go to an IU game. But yeah. $13 to me sounds like a real bargain to see Division I basketball. And it's the Oakland Golden Grizzlies. Greg Campy, who's been there almost 40 years, might even be 40 years now. Longtime coach of Oakland, Greg Campy. And he'll bring his Oakland Golden Grizzlies into the Gate Center. And it's a perfect place to, a perfect venue. And you know what? It's got energy built into that gymnasium. Because low ceiling, great sound. It can really get raucous in there. I remember when the Dons played there before they went to the Coliseum back 4, 5, 6 years ago. Max Landis and company hitting those threes. You could not hear the person next to you. It was so loud. And that's what we expect this Saturday as ESPN Television broadcasts the game nationwide on ESPNU. So you can come out, you can be on national TV, you can be part of a national TV game. Really cool experience here for Fort Wayne. And it also shows you the respect now that the Purdue-Fort Wayne Mastodons are getting, even nationally, and getting a chance to be on national TV, because this is the very first Horizon League broadcast in the contract with ESPN. And the game that was chosen was Purdue-Fort Wayne-Oakland. Because they could have taken Youngstown State and Wright State, which, quite honestly, is going to be a very, very intriguing game with two teams picked to finish in the top four of the league. So, big game Saturday on campus, 3 o'clock, and it was at the Coliseum, but because the Mad Ants play at the Coliseum on Saturday night, they had to move the game to the Gate Center because the 3 o'clock time period wouldn't work with what the Mad Ants needed for their game. So, it all works out. I love being at the Gate Center for games. It gives you chills. It's so exciting there. But big week. And then the women also playing Detroit and Oakland. And they're playing on Friday and Sunday at home at the Gate Center. So you've got 4 straight days of Mastodons Horizon League basketball. Thursday at the Coliseum, the men versus Detroit. Friday at the Gate Center, women versus Detroit. Saturday, Gate Center, men versus Oakland at 3 o'clock, and then the women play Oakland to finish off the weekend on Sunday afternoon. We're going to take a time out. When we come back, we'll talk some Colts football. Of course, we all saw what happened on Monday night. Where do the Colts go from here? We'll talk about it with Kevin Bowen. He's going to join us next on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
This is Chris Denary from the Indiana Pacers on Fox Sports Indiana, and you're listening to the Sports Rush with Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Indiana Tech men's basketball coach Ted Albert is coming up in hour number 2 today. Right now joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline from 93.5-107.5 The Fan down in Indianapolis, Kevin Bowen. Kevin, is it still 93.5-107.5? Is it just 107.5? Is 1070 back on the air? What is it now?
Yeah, we are 93.5-107.5. That would be FM, the signals there. That is the new brand. So, yeah, if you're in the Indy area, dial that up, terrestrial radio. The stream is probably the best option. So or 93.5/107.5 app, and then we're on YouTube as well each and every morning.
And I see you can't promote too much because, you know, I don't want people like changing the channel from our. But I just wanted to make sure it was still 93.5/107.5 the fan, and I wasn't, because I was thinking about it, because I sat there and listened to that rejoin with Kristen Airy, which we continue to play, and it says Fox Sports Indiana, and I keep thinking, that's wrong, that's old, that needs changed. But let's talk
Valley Sports.
Yeah, let's talk Colts football. Where do they go from here? Before we talk about the game, I want to kind of get a perspective of where you think the Colts are at as far as, is this a path of futility as far as any chance to make the playoffs? Do you believe there's still a miraculous opportunity that could be out there? Where do you think the Colts are at after that loss on Monday night?
Yeah, Brett, easily today was the most dejected I've seen that locker room all season long. It was a lot of answers about, you know, we're going to find out, you know, kind of guys and their level of motivation. Anytime you start to get those types of answers, you're hinting at there's not much to play for in terms of tangible evidence. You know, I think over the past few weeks when I've come on with you, Brett, I've said they've got to get to 9-7-1, you know, to have any sort of chance. They got to go 5-2 in these final seven. Well, you lost the first two after that Raiders game, and that was, you know, with the Eagles, and then, of course, on Monday against Pittsburgh. So, and there's no guarantee that 9-7-1 would be enough. And when you look at the schedule, it's the hardest stretch you've had all year of at Dallas, bye week, at Minnesota, home to the Chargers on Monday Night Football, at the Giants, and then Houston to end the year. Again, that is a very, very difficult stretch. I think when you combine all of that, reality is beginning to set in inside that building. I think reality was maybe a little bit clearer outside the building. Obviously, internally, teams hold on until they're officially eliminated. But I felt like today, guys realize that they've been knocked to the canvas, and they're probably one more blow away from, you know, TKO.
Well, and I think when you lose a winnable game like they had at home Monday night against a 3-7 Pittsburgh team coming in, reality hits you pretty hard. Let's talk about that game. The first half, offensive futility. They had nothing offensively. What were the issues? Was it the offensive line again? Was there something else as far as the play calling? Where do you point the finger as far as the offensive production or lack of it in that first half?
Yeah, I think it just, so much of it boils down to personnel for me, Brett. And I think in particular with the passing offense. I mean, if you look at this football team right now, there's no threat down the field vertically. I think back to the Chris Ballard quote at the start of the year of, you know, we need to make the layups, referencing Carson Wentz and the inability to make the layups last year. If you want to continue that basketball analogy, they're only attempting layups. They can't attempt anything outside of 2 feet, whether it's a three-point or a free throw, whether it's a three-point shot. And what I'm saying is there is no threat of anything past 5 yards down the field. There's a ton of analytics. I won't bore you with it. It's a ton of analytics that back it up. Mm-hmm. And it's historical stuff that is absolutely ugly. I mean, just so ugly. And in modern 2022 NFL, you can't have that. Now, I kind of point to three areas. Yes, there's some pass protection issues. I don't think it's as abundant as it was earlier in the year. You still see some free rushers and the inability to, you know, find those hot reads. And obviously, we saw, you know, Pittsburgh dial up that pass rush on the final drive. I don't think the pass catching group is dynamic enough to create separation. I mean, you go back and watch the early part of that game. Look at how easier it was for Kenny Pickett to complete balls, and look at how difficult it was for Matt Ryan to complete balls. In terms of separation, you know, again, a Pittsburgh defense just kind of suffocating Indy on the perimeter. And then lastly, it's a quarterback that just looks old. To me, the shoulder injury has got to be hindering in some way. I didn't think it looked this bad early in the season pre-injury. It's not like he had some howitzer for a right arm, but when he throws those balls, Matt Ryan, outside the numbers right now, it is waiting and waiting for the ball to get there. And that's such a dangerous game to play. And so I think it's all of that. You know, when you add up all of it, a quarterback that just doesn't have the velocity that you need, a wide receiver group in particular that can't create separation on a frequent basis, and then an offensive line that struggled to hold up in pass protection. To me, the passing offense is broken, and so much of it is personnel-driven.
I'm glad you mentioned that about Matt Ryan, because I brought that point up on Monday, that I said, you know, either the Colts are play calling to his injury, they're covering his injury, and I don't know if it's mental or physical or both, that Matt Ryan is just not comfortable and wants to get rid of it, and will get rid of it only 5 to 10 yards down the field max, because that's all we're seeing from this Colts offense right now. But the other part of that is, if you're going to throw it short, and I think, you know, the NFL has pretty smart defensive coaches, and when you don't have a vertical threat, everybody's jammed in that 5 to 10 yard area. And so, yeah, you don't get a lot of separation because everybody can come up and play you tight. They aren't afraid of you deep. And then even if you do get separation, there seems to be an extra defender in that, quote, box that makes it very difficult to really be open. And right now, I mean, you're probably right. It's personnel, because they're just not being able to break the big play and get over the top. Second half, Colts did show signs of life, but then got to that final minute, and everybody wants to talk about Jeff Saturday and his inexperience as a head coach, his clock management. I kind of felt like, hey, let's look at Matt Ryan first, because he could have taken all this pressure off Jeff Saturday if he would have just dove 2 yards farther down the field and gotten that first down. I thought that was mistake number one.
Yeah, I think the debate there, Brett, for me, is a little bit less about time management and more about game management. You know, I felt this way about the Jim Caldwell era. I think one of the memories of the Jim Caldwell era is that final game of Peyton Manning, Colts-Jets, 2010 season, wild card round. Jim Caldwell takes a timeout on the Jets' final drive that he did not need to. Colts had the lead by two. I think he was thinking in the back of his mind, they might get the ball back. It gave the Jets another chance to get into more manageable field goal range. Mark Sanchez to Braylon Edwards. I think it was Nick Folk kicked the game winner. And that was it. And, you know, that was probably one of my, like, more, I don't know, just a game that I remember a whole lot and think to myself, man, in-game coaching with time management and game management is so, so critical. Because it's a league defined by parity. And I think what you saw on Monday night was Jeff Saturday missing in that area of not taking the timeout after the sack on first down, not taking the timeout after the scramble on second down. Not only did it shrink the clock, but I think what it did more than anything is it continued to put an inexperienced personnel group, which is the Colts offensively, an inexperienced play caller, into some chaotic, think-on-your-feet type of situations. Mm-hmm. And what that does is then that stresses the one-on-one matchups. And what you saw on third down when you don't take the timeout is you have a rookie tight end, Jelani Woods, blocking Alex Highsmith, who I believe entered the game second in the AFC in sacks. And Highsmith said after the game, he knew right away, as soon as Woods lined up, and he could tell by Woods' position and Jonathan Taylor, where he lined up in the backfield, it was a run. And the Colts were in a bit of disarray. And instead of taking a timeout, they'd run the ball in that situation. The play gets blown up, and now it's a fourth down, and we know what happened on fourth down. Again, to me, it's more of a game management thing. If you take a timeout there, you bring everyone to the sideline. You've got your rookie left tackle, your rookie tight end, Jonathan Taylor, who's not used to being in those two-minute situations. That's not really his role within this offense. You kind of get everybody on the same page. You let Parks Frazier breathe for a minute from a play caller standpoint. You call a play, and then I think you call a fourth down play right then and there. And then you're not fighting the clock as much. And more importantly, you're not fighting chaos as much. Again, Saturday said that he regretted it looking back on it, and he should have taken a timeout there. Is that the end-all be-all for the game? No. But in a league that, again, is defined by so many one-possession games, as an in-game head coach, you've got to be on top of it when those situations come around.
I don't know what the analytics say, but I kind of have a philosophy that you get into that last minute. And I don't mind if you let the clock run down to the final minute, because I think really only a minute is what you need in the NFL to be able to execute when you've got all three timeouts. But I kind of felt like if you only have so many plays, every play to me is 7 to 8 seconds. And if you're going to burn two plays by not calling a timeout, that's too valuable. That's too much to turn, you know, that too many chips to put in on a seven deuce in your hand. I mean, it's like, hold on, relax a second, take the time out. I thought he missed the opportunity to take the time out, but I also thought Matt Ryan should have, with his experience, known where he needed to get that first down, because first downs are so important in that two-minute drill. Move the chains, get a new set of downs, keep the drive alive. I think that would have taken some of the pressure off Jeff Saturday. Here's some irony for you, Kevin. Before the season, we thought the Colts were a playoff team. And, you know, depending on your belief in the Colts, could have been a AFC title contender. I don't think anybody had them really as a Super Bowl championship contender. But everybody kind of thought, hey, this is a team that could win the AFC South. And they are now looking like a team that's going to be closer to the top part of the draft. The Indiana Pacers preseason were a team that we thought was tanking and would be in the running for maybe the number one overall pick. And here they are, a playoff team and fun to watch. It's a little ironic, isn't it, that we've got almost role reversal from what we expected.
Yeah, and like you said, expectations preseason-wise were very, very different. Yeah, I think what the Pacers did a great job of late last year is they finally admitted enough was enough. And that's tough to do. And kudos to Kevin Pritchard for admitting that what he had built was no longer working. And it had reached its ceiling, and they needed to do something different. So, ironically enough, with Pacers and Kings tonight, they executed that trade to Sacramento. They got Tyrese Halliburton. He was a huge, huge piece to getting things started. Benedict Mathurin comes in the draft. That is also a massive piece. And there's still additional, you know, puzzle pieces that have to come out of that. But that is just tremendous to have done that. And, again, restarted kind of your whole operation with the quarterback and Halliburton, and then Mathurin, a guy as a guard or a wing, that's so critical in today's NBA. The NFL, I think, is a little bit more difficult. Trades, obviously, are not as common, and quarterback means so much until you find that guy. It's going to be very difficult to get the rebuild really going. But what the Pacers have right now, what the Colts really, really need, the Pacers have offered their fan base hope, real hope. And the 12-8 record probably adds to that, but put that record to the side. Just watch the Pacers. Don't even look at their record. You watch them and you think about, wow, Halliburton and Mathurin and Nembhard's doing that, and maybe an Aaron Nesmith or maybe a Chris Duarte, maybe a Jalen Smith, and wow, I mean, they still got Buddy Hield and Miles Turner. They could maybe keep a Hield, and if Turner doesn't want to sign an extension, you can move him for a first-round pick. They have three first-round picks just right now for next year's draft. There's not so much going for them right now. Whereas the Colts, while their defense is playing pretty good football, we don't know who their GM, head coach, and quarterback will be come next September.
Yeah.
And when you don't have those pillars figured out, you aren't offering your fan base a whole lot of hope right now.
Well, and in some ways, the Pacers have done exactly what the Colts, what we kind of felt the Colts needed to do, which was make the big moves, go to the rebuild, get good player acquisition, because I thought that's where Kevin Pritchard has done a marvelous job, is that it's one thing to start over, but it's another thing to find the right guys to build the future with. And the draft pick of Mathurin, I think, looks like it's a brilliant pick. Nembhard looks like he was a steal in the draft. And the fact that they're doing this right now without Duarte even playing makes it even that much more impressive. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited with what the Pacers are able to do. And at this point, it's like I thought, you're winning too much. You're winning too much. And now it's like, okay, keep winning. You're fine. You know, and stay where you're at. But it is a lot of fun to watch. And it kind of makes up for what we're seeing with the Colts right now. Kevin, always a pleasure to have you on. Have a great remainder of the week. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
You bet. Thanks for having me, Brett.
Yeah, absolutely. That's Kevin Bowen joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. You know, you kind of feel that way about the Pacers. You know, when they got to like 5-6, and then they were 6-6, it's like, wait a minute, hold on. You're blowing your chance at Victor Wembanyama. Then all of a sudden they get to 12-8, and you're like,
slow your roll, yeah.
Heck, go ahead, man.
Now you can go, yeah.
Now you can go. Yeah, we'll go ahead and let you just go and be a playoff team, because right now, the way they're going and with the trajectory that they've got, let them see how far they can go. Build some confidence. And you've still got those picks for next year, like Kevin said. So you're still going to improve the team with more talented youth coming in next year. I kind of like the direction the Pacers are going. 46862 Parkview Sports Medicine text line.
Yeah, I was just going to say I'd be remiss if I didn't point out an amazing basketball performance yesterday from one Julius Randle of my New York Knicks.
Oh, boy.
It was his birthday yesterday, and he dropped 36 in three quarters yesterday. We blew out the Pistons by 30. So.
Okay, there you go. The we with the New York Knicks.
Yes, we did.
That is Adam Lundy with the Daily Knicks Report. Hey, you know what? We've got some exciting news. Purdue, Michigan, coming up this Saturday, Lucas Oil Stadium. Guess what?
What's up?
We got tickets.
Ooh.
And we are going to give them away.
All right.
And we're going to tell you how you can win those tickets to the Big Ten Championship game coming up just after 5 o'clock. Don't go anywhere. You've got it locked in on a Wednesday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.